You're rolling. You're good.
All right. Thank you. It's good to be here. And back to the basics. You know, it's funny. In sports, a lot of times when you get goofed up with something, it's because you needed to go back to the basics. So, that just really makes a lot of sense to really kind of go back. You need meat sometimes, but sometimes you just need that milk to really make sure that everything is good. So, leadership. This guy, his name is Eli M. Black. He was a brilliant businessman. And he was the mastermind behind a multi-dollar takeover for a company called United Fruit. Maybe some of you had heard that back in the 70s. At its peak, the company was importing one-third of all of the bananas in the United States. Matter of fact, it even owned the Chiquita banana brand, which I know you've had at least one of those, I would assume. Well, business was booming. Things were going incredibly well for Eli Black, but he was a man that just really liked being in power. He really liked the leadership power quality, and there was a book that was written that told a story about him. It was called The American Company, and it was talking about this executive who described a lunch that he had with Eli. So he hadn't eaten, and the executive was just famished, and so he sat down to eat with him, and the waitress brought a collection of some exquisite cheeses for an appetizer and some crackers. And Eli immediately grabbed it and kind of hoarded it and began kind of eating it, but really was putting up a very physical barrier that I'm not sharing this, but it was an appetizer, you know, to share. It was a kind of a lunch business meeting. And the executive was hungry, and he kind of, in the course of the conversation, hinted that, you know, I'd like some cheese crackers, please. But Eli just kind of continued on without even really acknowledging that. And at one point, he even grabbed a cracker and put a piece of cheese on it and just kind of held it on his fingertips. And didn't just continue to talk. And then finally, he reached over and put it on the executive's plate and then went back to kind of hoarding it. It just kind of really revealed a lot about Eli's character as a leader. He was a man who demanded that he be followed. And as a result, it kind of makes you wonder, okay, was he followed because he had to, or was he followed because people wanted to? Well, as the story continues on, we see a lot more about his character. In the 1970s, the company went into some really tough financial times. In three quarters of a year, they went $40 million in debt. To make it worse, just 4 years later, in 1974, a hurricane went through Honduras and wiped out almost all of their banana plantations. And so now they're really in tough times. By 1975, he was trying to make crooked deals underneath the table to try to recoup some of the money. He made a $2.5 million bribe to the president of Honduras to try to get some tax cuts and some other things like that. Well, the authorities came to realize that that's what was happening under the table. And so they were just a few weeks away from really cracking down on him. On February 3rd, 1975, Eli Black went up to the 44th floor of his office. He broke the window with his briefcase, and he jumped. All of that power, all of that leadership, and what did it ultimately get him? Did anyone actually really follow him? It's interesting to see that that was the result of all of the power and leadership that he had. He ended up committing suicide. What is true leadership? Oh, jumped a little bit ahead there. What is true leadership? You know, when we think of the idea of leadership, normally the number one idea that comes to my head is, I'm not a leader, right? Is that typically what we think of? When we think of, okay, we need to be leaders, and people go, man, I'm just not a leader. Well, when we look at Eli, he wasn't a leader, even though he was in a leadership position. When we think of what a leader is, sometimes we have this fanciful idea of this amazing orator and this guy with just this incredible charisma and he's able to deliver these powerful messages. And maybe we're getting a little bit closer to what a true leader is. It's not Eli, but I think this is kind of the idea of what we think a true leader is. Let me go ahead and play a video for you. Of Martin Luther King Jr.
mountain of today and tomorrow, I still have a dream. It is a dream deeply rooted in the American dream. I have a dream that one day this nation will rise up, live up to the meaning of its creed. We hold these truths to be self-evident that all men are created equal. I have a dream that one day on the red hills of Georgia, the sons of former slaves and the sons of former slave owners will they be able to sit down together at the table of brotherhood. I have a dream that one day, even the state of Mississippi, a state sweltering with the heat of injustice, sweltering with the heat of oppression, will be transformed into an oasis of freedom and justice. I have a dream that my four little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. I have a dream today.
When you look at what Martin Luther King Jr. said that day, it very well could be one of the most powerful speeches that has ever happened. I mean, just sitting here, you might have gotten goosebumps. Just realizing the situation, realizing the turmoil that our country was in because of this issue of racism, and hearing his incredibly powerful words. Again, we're talking about the idea of leadership. Sometimes this is what we picture. This guy who can speak so well and develop these lessons that are just amazing, and this huge following of people. Sometimes that's what we think of, and we're getting closer, but we're still not quite there. I mean, even he does not truly capture what a true leader is. I think this quote gets us even closer when we think of the idea of leadership, and that's this: a leader is a person with a magnet in his heart and a compass in his head. It's a person who knows where he's going, and he has the type of heart that people want to follow. A magnet in his heart and a compass in his head. But even that can be a variety of people. People can have an idea of where to go and it be the wrong way. Adolf Hitler. That was a man who certainly had a compass in his head, and it had the type of heart, I guess, that people wanted to follow him, which is why things happened the way that they did. So what is a true leader? And what is true leadership? True leadership is this: true leaders are Christ-like leaders. That's what it boils down to. See, there are many people who can lead, but what are they actually leading people to? A greater business sense? A success in a sporting event? See, what is the true success of their leadership? A lot of times it's short-term and it's not spiritually minded at all. So true leaders are Christ leaders. Now here's where it gets really cool. As I was studying for this, I came to make this realization that there are things that we see in Christ. There are leadership qualities that we see in Christ that every single person can do. You don't have to be a great orator. You don't have to be a great spokesman. You don't have to have a massive following to be a leader. As a matter of fact, you are a leader. You're either leading somebody one direction or you're leading them the other. There are no neutral leaders. Even neutral leaders are preventing the cause of Christ just by being dead weight. We're leading. We're leading by our example. We're leading by supporting somebody who's leading. We're leading by what we say. We're leading by what we do. We're leading by how we act. We are leaders. And so what I want to explore tonight are five Christ-like leadership qualities that anybody can do. It does not matter our age. It does not matter our status in life. It does not matter our bank account. It does not matter in any category of life. These are five Christ-like qualities that anybody can do. First one is dedication to God. When we look at Christ in Luke chapter 2, that's the story where he was talking, where his parents were in Jerusalem, and they end up kind of getting lost separated from him. And when they finally find him, they say, "Son, why have you treated us this way? We've been looking for you." And he said, "Why is it that you were looking for me?" In verse 49, "Did you not know that I had to be about my father's house, or be about my father's business, as some translations say?" Even at a young age, what we have is a man who is very dedicated to God. We see towards the end of the story in Matthew 26 and verse 39, where he's now in the garden, and he is in the face of the most difficult situation that he will ever encounter. Because at this moment in time, right here in the garden, he has the last option to flee. He has the last option to essentially change his situation, at least on a human level. We know the song, "He Could Have Called 10,000 Angels." But this was the moment before he's arrested that he could have done something about it. And so he prays in verse 39. He went a little bit beyond them, the apostles, and fell on his face and prayed, saying, "Father, if it is possible, let this cup pass from me. Yet not as I will, but as you will." That's dedication. To know what's coming and still say, "Man, I do not want to do this, but God, it's I'm following you." That's dedication. And as a result, in Philippians 2:8, we see kind of a summation of his dedication. "Being found in the appearance of man, he humbled himself by becoming obedient to the point of death, even death on the cross." See, that was a man worth following. Why? Because of his incredible dedication. This was one that was so dedicated that even his very life he was willing to give up for the Lord. And that's somebody that people wanted to follow. See, when we're talking about our own dedication, we kind of flip it back to ourselves, and we realize that when it comes to dedication to God, that's something any of us can do. Really, as Christians, that's what we should do. We can all be dedicated to the Lord. And we live in a society right now that's very wishy-washy. They waffle back and forth on tons of issues. I mean, if we just look at what's popular in today's society, why is it that people are now swinging to the support of homosexuality and abortion and so many of these morally corrupt ideas? Because that's what's popular. And that's what's easy. And so people flip back and forth onto what the culture says we should believe. Even in sports, we call them fair-weather fans, don't we? Why is it that the New York Yankees have so many fans of them? Because they've normally been good. Why is it the Los Angeles Lakers have so many fans? Because they're normally good. Maybe you recently heard that the Denver Broncos were named as America's team. Why? Because we've been kind of good lately. And so people are going, "Oh, I kind of want to support that team." When not too many years ago, it was the Dallas Cowboys that was considered America's team. Why? Because they are successful. It's interesting that people will flop back and forth on whatever is popular. It reminds me of Ephesians, where we are not to be as children tossed here and there by every wind of doctrine. Well, in our society, it's every wind of popular belief. Dedication is rare. And so when we find somebody who is truly dedicated to the Lord, that's something that's worth following. That's something that's nice to do. That's something that we latch on to. Not too many years ago, in 1818 in France, there was a guy by the name of Louis. Louis was about 9 years old, and his father was a saddle maker, and he told his father, "Dad, I want to be a great saddle maker like you." And his father said, "Well, then we need to get started. We need to start doing this." And so at 9 years old, he gave him a hammer and a chisel, and he said, "Okay, here's this piece of leather. You need to start making holes in it. Just be careful not to hit your thumb or anything like that." And so Louis went to eagerly punching holes in it. As it turns out, he kind of missed the chisel, and it flipped in a way that it ended up striking his eye, and he went blind in one eye. As an unfortunate turn of events, he ended up going blind in the other eye as well. So now we have a young boy who is now blind in both eyes. Well, he was sitting out in the garden one day, and a friend brought him a pine cone. And he started feeling that pine cone and getting very excited, realizing how much he could feel with his fingertips. And he had an idea. He wondered if he might be able to develop an alphabet using a series of bumps. I'll give you one guess to what Lewis's last name was. Braille. Well, to me, that's only half the story. Because about 100 years later, there was a guy by the name of William McPherson who was involved in a dynamite explosion that he ended up losing both of his hands, he lost sight in his eyes, and he lost feeling in other parts of his body and his face and stuff like that too. Well, he was a Christian, at least in the broad sense. I don't actually know his true beliefs. But one thing that he was very upset about was the idea that he was not able to read Scripture and with his eyes. And so he heard about it, and he didn't have hands, so he couldn't do Braille. But he heard about a woman that was able to read the Bible with her lips. So he gave that a try. But he had lost feeling. The nerve endings in his lips had even been damaged. And so he decided, well, I guess I'll try my tongue. And so he went about learning Braille with his tongue. And at times it got his tongue, as you can imagine, got really sore and even maybe bloody at times. But after 65 years, by the time he was able to finally read Braille, he had made it through the Bible 4 times. Not with his eyes, not with his hand, with his tongue. What is our excuse? That was very loud. What is our excuse? But that the dedication is incredible. It is amazing to see someone like that, and we latch onto stories like that, and we go, wow, if I could have a quarter of that dedication, that would be amazing. See, when it comes to dedication, I'm sorry, I'm not doing that on purpose. When it comes to dedication, it's something that we really latch onto. We look at Christ's dedication. He was a man who was very dedicated, and so if we want to be leaders, then we need to be dedicated to God. Anyone can do that. Anyone can show dedication to God. And as a result, people will see that, and we will be, in a sense, a leader. Because real leaders are Christ-like leaders. The second,
sorry about that,
you're
Brent.
Right. I apparently agree. All right, we good?
Never heard that before.
Yeah. Okay. The second Christ-like leadership quality is this idea of love for others. We know that Christ showed an incredible amount of love. That's really what he was all about, was this idea of love. When we get into the book of Matthew, there's 5 times that we see that Christ had compassion. One of them is used in a parable, but applies to the way that Christ is and how he'll be in judgment. In Matthew 9:36, Matthew 14:14, 15:32, 18:27, and 20, verse 34, we see this idea of Christ having compassion. A lot of times he'll see the crowd and he'll have compassion on the crowd. And so the question is, well, what did he do with that? Every time that Christ had compassion on people, it resulted in action. His love for people translated to him doing something for them. So at one point he sees the blind and the lame and he has compassion on them and he heals them. But perhaps maybe one of the greatest stories of his love is in John chapter 11, if you'll turn over there with me. Go ahead and turn to John chapter 11. Pretty familiar story. So what we know about this story is that Lazarus has just died. And Christ had waited 3 days, and then he travels out to them, and he's met with this huge scene where everyone is just crying and weeping, and people are so upset by this situation. And even he has, you know, his friends, Mary and Martha, they're coming up, and they're saying, Lord, if you had just been here, if you had just been here, you would have been able to heal him, and you would, you know, everything would have been okay. And Christ, seeing all of this situation, even though knowing what he's about to do, right? Even knowing his power and what he's about to do, in verse 35, Jesus wept because of his love for the people. He could have been like, hey, just hold on, watch what's about to happen. But that wasn't it. He was able to sympathize and empathize with the people and the loss that they were having. He loved them. It was even something that was evident. If you look in the next verse, so the Jews were saying, see how he loved him. His love was very evident. And it translates to action. Because then he rises him from the dead. Christ was one that, of course, displayed amazing love. And it didn't just stop there. It even went to the point to where he died on the cross because of his love for us. That is an attribute that is worth following. And that is why he gathered such a large following of people, because people could see his love. And it was amazing. When it comes to our love, it's very similar. We've probably heard the statement, people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. People want to see that we love them and we care about them. That's a leadership quality. It's interesting when you think about the first two that we just said. Dedication to God, love for others. In Matthew 22, 37, 39, Jesus said the greatest and foremost commandment is what? Love the Lord your God with all of your heart, all of your soul, all of your mind, and all your strength. That's dedication. And the second was what? Love your neighbors yourself. Loving others. See, that's a leader. Someone who loves God and loves others is a good person, is a person that's worth following. And so when we think about us, if you love God and you love me, I want to be around you, right? And it comes vice versa. See, that is leadership. But how? How are we supposed to show this? It translates to action. So when there's a death in the family, we're there. When someone's in the hospital, or whether it's a surgery or maybe a birth or something, we're there to support them. Maybe it's something as simple as someone needs a meal. Or maybe someone just needs a ride to the airport. Or maybe someone just needs a card. We're there. Maybe it comes in the form of support, helping them with something. Maybe it's financial support. We're there. That's love for each other people. It even translates in the words that we say. Hebrews 3, verse 13. But encourage one another day after day, as long as it's still called today, so that none of you will be hardened by the deceitfulness of sin. Encouraging each other. That's showing love. Because we know that we're there. I don't have to say anything. I don't have to do anything. But if I do, it's because of love. Those are attributes that are worth following. And it's worth being leaders. And anyone can do it. Anyone can be dedicated to God. Anyone can love other people. But it doesn't just stop there. When we get to our third attribute, we also see that Christ displayed humility of heart. Humility of heart is a Christ-like leadership quality. Christ's humbleness was something that truly was amazing. When we look at John chapter 13, we should be just a chapter away there. In John chapter 13, what we have starting in verse 3 is this. Jesus, knowing that the Father had given all things into his hand, and that he had come forth from God and was going back to God, got up from supper, and laid aside his garments, and taking a towel, he girded himself. Then he poured water into the basin, and began to wash the disciples' feet, and to wipe them with the towel which he, with which he was girded. Now let's think about this for a minute. These feet were not these womanly feet that were well manicured and, you know, or pedicured or whatever, you know, whichever hands, feet, I always get it, whatever. They weren't, you know, fresh smelling. It was nothing like that. We're talking about like dirty guy feet, stinky stuff. Not only that, but they wear sandals all the time. Their main form of transportation is walking. And so they're on their feet all the time, getting dirty but and smelly. But not only that, but not the most of sanitary of times, right? So maybe people didn't quite take care of their waste. Maybe you have to trudge through what you hope is water, but may not be. Maybe there's some puddles or things in the street that's getting on your feet. People also are not properly taking care of their trash. That's on the ground. Maybe that's what's also on your feet. But beyond all of that, we're talking about the greatest man who has ever lived on the face of the earth. He's the most prominent. He's God's son. He is deity in the flesh. He's the most important. He's the most supreme. And he's down there washing those feet. How in the world is that happening? Because of humility of heart. Christ was a person of incredible humility. And a lot of times when we look at our society, we look at leaders, there's stuff that's like, oh, that's below me. It's kind of the idea, isn't it? Not Christ. See, humility is not thinking less of ourselves. It's thinking about ourselves less. And as a result of that, we're thinking about others more. Christ showed incredible humility. And because of his humility, people wanted to follow him. Because he wasn't this arrogant leader of, yes, I'm great and you must follow me. Even though he was great. But he was one that showed humility. He even said it to this way. The greatest among you will be your servant. And that's what he was. He was a servant. When we're thinking about ourselves, this idea of humility of mind is completely opposite of the way that our society operates. We think about some of the things, some of the avenues that we have in this life. Facebook a lot of times is used as this outlet to say, hey, look how awesome that I am. Look at this achievement that I've done. We also look at the sporting world. And we see some of the sporting figures. If you've been watching the Olympics, you've even seen some of this lately. Usain Bolt is always looking around him to see, basically to, I guess, rub it in the face of, hey, I have to look back to see you. In this race, you're not in front of me. Even in sports and football, there's end zone dances and all kinds of stuff like that, celebrations. Everything is about, look how awesome I am. And if people don't see that, then we feel the need to portray it even more. I was talking with Wes Autry, if you know him, one of the members at Bear Valley, and he said that he went back and he watched a football game from like 40 years ago or 50 years ago or something like that, and he said, one of the most interesting observations that I had noticed was this. A guy would make a great play, and he would get up, and he would walk back to the huddle. That was it. It wasn't like this elaborate thing, you know, dabbing, none of that. It was just get up and go back to the huddle. That was his job. That was part of his position. He accomplished it. Go back and do it again. Not in today's NFL. It's all about, look how awesome I am. And you know, there's even been times where a guy will make a sack and he's so busy dancing that he's not noticing that the opposing team has already started the next play and have been caught off sides and stuff like that. It's all about self-promotion. It's really interesting. Our society is not humble. It's not humble at all. And so if we are, it stands out. And we look at somebody who's humble and we say, boy, that's somebody that's worth following. That's a servant heart. See, humility is putting others first. Philippians 2, verse 3 and 4 says this: do nothing from selfishness or empty conceit, but with humility of mind, regard one another as more important than yourself. Do not merely look out for your own personal interest, but also for the interest of others. If I'm willing to put you first, that's something that's worth following. Christ put others ahead of himself, which is why so many people wanted to follow him. People will follow those who care enough to serve them. People will follow those who care enough to serve them. Anyone can be humble of heart. It's not super difficult. Anyone can do it. Let's lead through a Christ-like humility. Why? Because true leaders are Christ-like leaders. The fourth attribute, the fourth leadership quality is integrity of mind. Integrity is the true you. Integrity is the person that we are when no one is looking. Integrity is the person that we are when we know we won't get caught. Integrity is the person that we are when we don't have to present our best to others. Integrity is the person inside our mind. That's the true us. And so if that person is consistent here, as it is when we're not here, that's integrity. That's true character. When we look at Christ's integrity, of course, he was a man of unbelievable, impeccable integrity. In Matthew 16, 1, it talks about how the Pharisees and Sadducees came up and testing Jesus. They asked him to show a sign from heaven, testing him. Are you really who you say you are, Jesus? 19, verse 3, some Pharisees came to Jesus, testing him and asking, is it lawful for a man to divorce his wife for any reason at all? They're trying to trap him. 22, verse 18, but Jesus, perceiving their malice, and said, why are you testing me, you hypocrites? Verse 35 now. One of them, a lawyer, asked him a question, testing him. See, people wanted to test him. They wanted to see, are you really who you say you are? We want to find flaws so badly in you, Christ. We want to find a flaw in you. But they couldn't, because he had integrity. He was who he said he was. And there was nothing wrong to find in him. Even Satan tried it. If you remember back in Matthew chapter 4, 1 through 11, in the temptations of Jesus, three times, there's Satan trying to see if he can wiggle in a way to get a sin out of Christ. But he was a man of integrity, and it wasn't going to happen. Even in Luke 23, verse 4, kind of at the end of nearing the end of his time, Pilate makes this great observation. He just says, I find no guilt in him. I find no guilt in this man, because he was a man of integrity. See, we live in a time and an age right now where people are completely intolerant of inconsistency. People will not tolerate hypocrisy. Now, we all have mistakes, we all have flaws, but people do not, especially the young age, the teens, they will not tolerate people who are disingenuous. We need to be people of integrity. I don't know if you've seen this movie, Courageous. I guess spoiler alert. One of the main characters, his name is Javier, has been going through some really difficult financial difficulties. Him and his wife are just on the brink of collapse. So much tension because of the financial problems. And he gets this job and he comes in. He's been working for a little bit. And the boss says, listen, Javier, we want to give you a promotion. But what we want you to do is on these shipping labels, we want you to fudge the numbers a little bit. Just lie a little bit about them. And if you're willing to do this, then we're willing to give you promotion. He says, but go think about it. Come back to us tomorrow morning. Tell us your answer. So the next day, Javier comes in the office. The boss asks him, if you've had time to think about it. He says that he has. And so the boss says the words, are you on my team? And Javier kind of, dips his head, hangs it low, and says that he appreciates the job that he's offered him and he's enjoyed working here, but he couldn't do what they're asking him to do. The boss says, well, what do you mean? He goes, it's wrong. And I'm not going to do this against God and against my family. And the boss looks at him and says, you realize what impact this will have on your job, don't you? He goes, yes, I do. Hangs low, he's just waiting for it to come. The boss stands up, holds out his hand and says, Javier, can I shake your hand? You gave the right answer. I've been looking for somebody that I can trust. Another guy that was in the room said that they had had six other men in there and none of them passed the test. He said, Javier, you were the last on my list, but I needed someone that I can trust. He said, if you're willing, the job is yours. And so he says that he is, and he's willing to start the job, and he's about to walk out the door, and the boss says, Javier, thank you for your integrity. It's rare. How true that is today, too. To have people of integrity who are genuine, who are who they say they are. And certainly that's who we need to be as well. Anyone can have integrity of mind. And it's an attribute worth following. And it's an attribute that can be displayed as a leader by anyone. We need to lead through Christ-like integrity. Why? Because true leaders are Christ-like leaders. Last one this evening. The fifth leadership quality is someone who stands up to evil, stands against evil. When we look at Christ, there are many times throughout his ministry where he stood against evil. Really, that's where he really got himself in trouble, was because he was opposing the Pharisees and scribes so severely that they just really wanted to get rid of this guy. Matter of fact, if you look in the Sermon on the Mount, really the whole point of the Sermon on the Mount falls on 5 verse 20, where it says, your righteousness must surpass the scribes and Pharisees. And then he talks about a bunch of categories that they needed to do it in, all the way through chapter 7. The whole point is, yeah, you think these guys are righteous? You got to be better than them. He's standing up in the face of the enemy at that time, which is the scribes and Pharisees. We know in chapter 21, where he makes the triumphal entry, that he ends up driving out the people in the temple because he was not going to tolerate the sin that was taking place there. We even see in verse 20, chapter 23, if you've ever just read that, man, he is just slamming the scribes and Pharisees, where he'll say, woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you clean the outside of the dish and of the plate, but not the inside. Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, who outwardly are whitewashed tombs, but inwardly are full of dead men's bones and uncleanliness. Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites. Later he calls them snakes and brood of vipers. I mean, he's not holding back. He stood up in the face of difficulty and in the face of evil. He was not afraid. We need to be people in today's day and age who are willing to stand up to evil at the workplace. When people are slamming God or gossiping or, hey, let's go grab drinks at school, where, hey, let's go see this movie, or, hey, let's go to this party, or maybe even at home in the face of the TV or the computer or our phone. We need to be people who stand against evil. It's interesting that 1 Corinthians 15:33 says bad company corrupts good morals. Bad company doesn't have to be people. It can be devices and things like that, where we're in the bad company of television and what is displayed there. We can be in that bad company. We need to stand up against evil in our homes. We need to stand up against evil in our families. We need to stand up against evil in life. Because if we don't, then who will? Because in this day and age, I don't know who would. It seems like there is so much loose morality. It's hard to find somebody of, as we just talked about, integrity, but even more so someone who is willing to stand up against it. James 4:7, resist the devil and he will flee from you when you stand in his face. Saw an interesting thought, and that was this. The difference between a hero and a normal person is this. Both are afraid. The hero is just willing to act in the face of his own fear. We're all afraid to talk to our friends and family members about Christ. The hero is willing to do it. Anyway, we're all afraid to stand against the peer pressure and the ideas of our society. The hero, the leader, is willing to go ahead and do it anyway in the face of those fears. We could be heroes. We've got to stand up against evil, speak out, and anyone can do it. You don't have to be a great orator. You don't have to have a charismatic personality. You don't even have to be able to, you know, really have a super strong argument. Sometimes just standing up and just saying, you know, I don't think we should do that. That speaks volumes. Some of the greatest leaders in the world did it in very humble means. Kind of going back to the time of slavery, Rosa Parks. All she did is sit where people thought she shouldn't sit. That was it. But it was a big leading example at that time. When we think about Christ as a leader, he was not what people expected. People expected him to come down in this triumphal entry, to come in a way that people were going to just really be able to stand behind this great general, but that was not going to be who he was. You know, I think a lot of times we think of it as the idea of like Aladdin. If you've ever seen Aladdin, where Prince Ali is marching in, the horns are going, and he's got all of these elaborate things, and he's got the golden camels and all kinds of stuff like that. He's got these decorations, and he's parading in with this magnificent display. And that's what our society thinks of greatness and leadership. You think about the way that the presidential candidates present themselves. It's all about this huge, elaborate, look at me, look at my power, look at my prestige. Even you know, with kings and with queens and with rulers, that's the idea. Christ, when he came, was on a donkey. The greatest man who's ever lived on a donkey. But that's the kind of leader he was. He was one who was dedicated. He was one who loved others. He was one who was humble. He was one who had integrity. He was one that was willing to stand up in the face of fear. Something that's interesting when I started thinking about this is when I looked at the qualifications of elders and I started thinking about these five qualities. And then what I did is I went and I looked at every qualification of an elder in 1 Timothy 3 and in Titus 1 and in 1 Peter. I looked at all of those and I said, okay, how do these fit in with the qualifications of elders? This is essentially what I found out. I just put the letter next to each one. We won't go through each of these just by the idea of time. But here was my observation. When we think about God's qualifications for an elder, elders are to be some of the most faithful people on the earth. These five qualities fit into every single one of them. Sometimes multiple of them fit into one category. See, even God's appointed leaders for today don't have to be these incredible speakers. They don't have to have this huge following. They don't have to be an orator. They don't have to be this charismatic personality. They just need to be Christ-like men. Can we not do that same thing? See, anyone can have these qualities. Now, it does say husband of one wife, so I understand there's some gender-specific things here. But the idea is everyone can be blameless. Everyone can be prudent. Everyone can manage their household well. Everyone can be able to teach and exhort sound doctrine, refute those who contradict. These are all qualities that we can display. We can be leaders. We can be people who are dedicated to God. We can be people who love other people. We can be people who are humble. We can be people of integrity. We can be people who stand up in the face of difficulty and in the face of evil. Anyone can do that. There's kind of a running joke where a great man showed up in this fancy suit and this really awesome sports car. And he pulled up and he saw this old farmer and he just said, "Have any great men been born here?" And the farmer kind of thought for a minute and said, "No, I think just babies have been born here." Great men and great women, it's not something you're born into greatness. It's something that's earned. It's something that's worked on. Leadership is a must. Leadership is happening one way or another. Let's be people who are like Christ, because real leaders are Christ-like leaders.
And all of God's people said,
Amen.
Amen. Brett.